Good morning and welcome. It is 9:07. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. The 9 o'clock stretch is officially on. So don't forget to do your stretches. Hey, your top stories, not a lot of action yet with Iran, still in kind of a holding pattern. Iran still denying they're even having direct talks with us. Wildfires continue near Spokane, Washington. That's going to be a real issue. Ukraine and Russia, that conflict continues on with more death and destruction, unfortunately. We'll get into more of those headlines and top stories coming up. But first, I want to give you a chance to meet Mike Mills. You're running for school board in Marion County, school board district number 4. Yes, now, I guess, first of all, why? Why do you want to run?
Well, I love education. So I was born and raised in Ocala. I left for some years. I was in the Navy. I served as a nuke machinist mate. And when I graduated, I felt like I had a lot of opportunities, right? Now, today, I'm a father. I've got two kids in the public school system, and I'm a concerned father that wants to make sure that not only my kids, but all of the kids in our system have the same opportunities and more.
Yeah, you continued your education. You got an MBA. You started your own business. And I love you term that concerned father, because really that's how a lot of people get involved. They care about their kids' education. It's critically important, as you know. Marion County, like every other place, has had its challenges. You know, give me an idea what you think, Mike, your mission is moving forward should you get elected to the school board of Marion County.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. We go back to what's most foundational. We need to support our teachers. We have great teachers in Marion County, and they often do not get the respect or credit they deserve, but they are accomplishing some really great things. So we got to do a much better job of supporting them. In addition to that, equipping our students. Something we were just talking about a few minutes ago, AI. You know, AI is a great resource, but it's important we equip our students to make sure they continue to learn how to learn, right? Because at some point, you know, something like AI could disrupt that. The whole stream.
Why think it out when you can get AI to work it out for you in milliseconds? Yeah, that is going to be, I think, a huge challenge moving forward. Already, I saw recently where a professor busted his students using AI for a term paper that they weren't supposed to use, and he busted them on it, and he specifically said, don't use it, and they used it, and they got caught. It is hard not to look for an advantage and an edge. So you say, hey, AI has got the answers for me. You know, why do I have to dig through all of this on my own?
That's absolutely right. And I see it also. So I'm a professor at the College of Central Florida in the business school, and we see it on papers all the time. But we talk through it, and, you know, I encourage every student to use the resources we have at hand, but don't miss the point of the paper.
All right. So, you know, looking ahead, well, I guess you have to look behind and ahead because you have to know where you're at. Based on what you've accomplished or they have accomplished previously, you know, in the school board and all of that, are you concerned about the curriculum? And in many other areas, I know in Alachua County, when COVID hit, parents started to look at the curriculum and they were flabbergasted by some of the content that didn't seem to be what we would consider, you know, the three R's. You know, they got more into the social thing, the gender thing, and all that. Are you concerned about that, or is that something that Marion County has already dealt with?
So Marion County is in a really good spot in that regard. Having said that, it's important to always be in the assessment and auditing, you know, always making sure that we're doing the right thing, right? I think some of the most important factors along the same lines are making sure that our kids get to school. Absenteeism is something that we've struggled with. A lot of counties struggle with it, but our demographic, it's a little more challenging.
So, I thought it was shocking. You know, I had Dr. Sarah James in. She's running for a different position in the school board, and she's the incumbent. But she did talk about an absentee rate of somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%.
30%, yes.
That's outrageous.
Isn't it? Can you imagine? I don't know. When I was in school, I bet I still have the certificates, in fact, that I had perfect attendance. Mama made sure I made it to school. Made sure.
I got it 1 year, and my mom was so proud. I think it was like second grade, but I think she bragged on that till I was about 14. Yeah. Yes, perfect attendance. That's just what you did.
Right.
And
how do you teach them otherwise? If they're not in the seat, no matter how good the teacher is, if the student's not in the seat.
And how do you bust that down? I mean, look, they're only teachers. They can't go to everybody's house and shake the parents. I mean, it just doesn't work that way, although they're put in those roles a lot of times, maybe more often than they should be. But from the school board position, how can you really attack this absenteeism effectively? That's a challenge.
It is, yeah. I think there are a couple things. One, we find ways to hold people accountable to make sure that the kids are getting the education they deserve. And then we can also equip the community with more resources. There's this program that I'm the past president of the Education Foundation, and there's this program called New Worlds Reading Initiative. Great program.
What's it called again?
New Worlds Reading Initiative.
New Worlds Reading Initiative.
Yes, it's a great program. So students who are reading below level, K through 5, this program will, they host activities and essentially seminars to teach the household, right? In addition to that, they'll provide 63 books over the course of a school year to the family to really grow their home library. And there's huge benefit. And just reading books are really important, but the visibility of books within the house, it drives kids to want to read.
It just drives me crazy because I'm like, doesn't every single adult agree that reading is critical skill? Mm-hmm. You know, we can argue all day long about, you know, how algebra may be applied later on life and other things. But I mean, the reading is the key that opens all of the doors. How did we even get behind this grade level stuff? Where did that begin? And what parents aren't getting the message of starting to read to their kids, learning the alphabet, and then, you know, and sticking with it?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine having... So my mom, I'll go back to my history, right? Being from Marion County, we were in poverty. That's just how we grew up. Mama made us feel like we had the whole world, right? But what she did is she was involved in our curriculum. Despite dad not making a good deal of money, mom stayed home anyways because she wanted to be involved in our academics, wanted to be involved in our athletics. And it's across the board, studies show that when a child or a student has an involved parent, they excel in every category.
Yeah, and again, I mean, is there a stick and a carrot approach that you can do? I think the punishing side of it, isn't that effective because there is some cultural divide, mindset divide, not placing importance on education, and that's a tough one to overcome. Maybe a carrot approach, somehow the child can benefit. Maybe it has nothing to do with education. Maybe you got a lack of a better term, I don't know, pay them in some way, maybe not in actual cash, but in some way, some sort of incentive to keep them in there. And you hate to have to do that, but I mean, really, we can change their life fundamentally if we can get them to sit in there and at least read it near grade level, right?
That's absolutely right, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give you the last 30, 60 seconds, whatever you need. But the question is, why should people in Marion County vote for Mike Mills to be on the school board?
I appreciate that. So I am a product of our Marion County public school system. My kids are enrolled in our school system. I'm a professor and an employer where I'm actively engaged with the results of our school system. I've got a very unique and I think valuable perspective on what we've done in the past, what we're doing today, and what the results look like, right? I think we need to support every student's pathway to success. And that means trades, that means college, that means going straight into the workforce. We've got programs now where kids, over 40 programs where kids can leave high school with certifications in industry, go straight into the workforce, making a great deal of money, livable wages. So support our teachers and equip our students, and I think everything else kind of falls in place.
Well, and any other information you can get from your website, which is?
It's MikeMillsMarionSchools.com.
MikeMillsMarionSchools.com for more information. We appreciate your time here on the Bob Rose Show, and we wish you much success in the future. And no matter what happens, we want the students in Marion County to do well. My Social Security check is counting on it.
That's right. Thank you so much.
That's how you look at it when you start getting some gray hairs, Mike, which you don't seem to have to worry about yet.
They're coming.
Yeah. Well, you got two kids and your own business, so they could be on their way. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Stick around. We're going to talk to Erica Donalds, founder of the Education Freedom Foundation. And we're going to do that next right here on the Bob Rose Show. 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome, my friends. It is 9:21 on the Bob Rose Show. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Hey, quick shout out to Mike Mills, who I just spoke to. He's running for school board in Marion County, and I didn't get a chance to thank him for the fine coffee that he brought me. Symmetry Coffee was delicious, and then, of course, I figured out why, because, well, he owns the business. So yeah, there you go. But thanks again, Mike. Appreciate it. And the best of luck to you. And, yeah, these are important issues that are facing all of us as parents and your kids' education, as people who live here in the Sunshine State. I mean, you know, we've got a big race for governor, obviously, coming up. All these things that, you know, are going to impact us in the near future and then certainly in the distant future. So all of these decisions have to be made. Make sure that you show up and vote. That is critically important. After years of debate, a former COVID response coordinator is finally coming around to the fact that the source of the pandemic, the COVID-19 thing, was probably a lab leak. This is Dr. Jha, Ashish Jha. And he revealed this on an interview on CNN and finally saying, yeah, it was likely caused by a lab leak. And but that was not the theory that most of the folks went with. So here we are, you know, years later. And the only thing we can do is try to learn from that whole experience of that pandemic and what it meant. And I can tell you, my takeaway, one of the biggest ones is a real loss of freedom, a real loss of freedom when so many people were subjected to either taking that vaccine or losing their employment or being booted out of the military, which occurred. I mean, think about that. There's no real due process. Remember the whole religious exemptions thing? That turned out to be a complete and utter joke. I can't remember what the stats were, but the number of people that truly got a religious exemption was minuscule. Minuscule. I don't know how many they actually said yes to. I think they absolutely just threw that out there to say that they were doing it. But I think they rarely followed through and allowed somebody with a religious exemption. What about a constitutional exemption? You know? Isn't it crazy that they could force you to put something into your body? Force you to do it. And that's basically what they did. They really suspended the Constitution of the United States. And here's what some would say, especially those on the left who are all in on this. Oh, it's a pandemic. It's like nothing else. Look, it's an emergency. And it is like a lot of other things. Under an emergency, you don't put the Constitution on hold. As soon as we get through with this, you know, emergency, we're going to allow you to then once again have your civic rights and civil rights restored. No, that's wrong. Now, look, I get it. When this thing first came out and it was evolving slowly and then more rapidly, you know, the cause for concern grew and grew. I didn't know what the best course of action was. What did I do? Like many other people, you look for voices of experience. And the people that are trusted, I'm like, you know, this Dr. Fauci guy, he's not a politician. He's a career scientist. He's dealt with vaccines. That's supposed to be his expertise, right? So, of course, a lot of us went along with that. But the threat from an employer, that's, you know, that creates a great amount of leverage for most people. And look, and I applaud the people who didn't cave into that, who stood by their principles. And that's a tough challenge. But it's something that we all need to be up for. Look, I'll be honest, I failed. I did the Pfizer 1-2 shot. some had to do with my employer. Also, I knew I wanted to travel. Those two factors. I talked to my daughter about it, who's a PA, and I respect her opinion. Unfortunately, she was all in on it. Don't blame her in any way, shape, or form. I mean, she's doing the best she can with the information she's given, as we all were. Here's where the problem is. Once again, you're suspending the Constitution, the freedom of speech. When you can't get information from other sources other than the government line, that's exactly what they were doing. They were stopping all other flows of information and labeling them as disinformation. You know, it's one thing to put a little asterisk on it or something. The NIH doesn't necessarily agree with these opinions or whatever. Okay, fine. If you need to do that, that's okay. But you have to allow people that flow of information and that freedom of speech. And they clearly they didn't. And the way they went after ivermectin, you see how they distorted that whole thing? Remember when they said this is a drug that's used for animals? This thing had been a respected, well-used pharmaceutical drug for like 40 or 50 years. So that's just one that the left got so wrong. Why were they so dead set against us finding anything out about something else that might help us, especially like before the vaccine, but then certainly during the vaccine? Oh, forget about it. And some pharmacists were deciding whether and again, under threat of their employment, whether or not they were going to fill a prescription. No, we're not going to fill ivermectin. You imagine that? So they're overruling a doctor. They're only doing it because, at least in most cases, they were forced to by their employer. So you had big business in cahoots with big government. And does that ever really benefit the people in general? No. So you have to look at what they did, how it was structured. Shut up anybody who disagrees with us. Promote this thing with lies. When they said 95% efficacy, in other words, this is effective, 95% when that vaccine came out, I'm like, wow, that is miraculous. I said it on the air. I go, wow, that is miraculous. And I even said, I go, there's a part of me that says, they might be overselling just a tad here. Well, of course they were. There weren't any studies that were done long enough to even get an idea of the efficacy, let alone side effects, long-term side effects, etc. But yeah, the most frightening thing is that the Constitution was put on hold and the government took over. And the government even got into what? Social media, who seemed more than happy to help to squash the people's voices and any other opinions from other experts even, if it disagreed with the official line. We can never forget that, my friends. 9:29 on the Bob Rose Show, 15 minutes away from things that make you smile. You're listening to 97.3 The Sky. Information is power. With upcoming elections, you need to know all you can about candidates. And we invite and talk to many of those candidates. And you can't always be right there on top of the radio. We get that. So if you miss something, all you need to do is listen to the Bob Rose Show podcast on Odyssey, iHeart, TuneIn, pretty much any platform, wherever you normally get your podcast. Do that. Just search the Bob Rose Show. And then click follow, and you'll be able to catch up on all that stuff because, yes, boy, you know, they always tell you elections are important and all that. But as we come up to the midterms, my goodness, there's so much riding on it. But then you don't want to lose sight of how important a lot of local stuff is. These are things that will affect you directly. You know, if you have kids, well, if you pay taxes, all of that stuff. So, all right, we'll continue to do our due diligence to the best of our abilities, and I hope that you do the same. Have you been to the Smithsonian? I have. It's been a few years, and it was probably a few years before that. So it's been a while. You know, they've been involved in some controversy lately. Okay, is this just a left or right thing? What are they promoting there? Well, here's some perspective. A historian and museum professional accused the Smithsonian of abandoning its educational mission in favor of activism following his visit to the National Museum of American History. For the first time in more than a decade, he hadn't been there in over 10 years. And he's hearing the criticism from the Trump administration and conservatives over how the museum presents American history. So this guy wanted to go check it out for himself. It is a completely different place than when I was there in 2012, he said. Dr. Jody Edward Ginn told Fox News, "Its mission is clearly exactly what they changed it to be. It is a museum for activism. They use history, but that's kind of the problem. You know, scholars of history, and I don't consider these folks scholars anymore, they're activists." After reading the administration's Domestic Policy Council report accusing Smithsonian of failing to present history in a way that is inspiring, unifying, and worthy of our great republic, Ginn said he traveled all the way from Texas to see it for himself. "From the moment I walked in, it's a very different experience. Now, I wasn't totally shocked by this because I've been watching this evolution in my field for over a decade." As he made his way through the exhibits, Ginn said the institution seeks to specifically direct visitors to action rather than give them the information to make their own decisions. It became this goal, their own stated goal, to turn museums from institutions of education, of public education, into institutions to encourage activism, which you could also say is to indoctrinate. Ginn said he found factually incorrect information in some exhibits, but argued what they don't tell visitors is just as misleading. The biggest problem is what they leave out. Ginn argued that the museum's graphic and sexually explicit exhibits have no place in the museum frequented by children and families, saying that they're out of sync with what museums were just a few years ago. They're specifically geared toward all ages. Why would you do that? All of that's out of sync. He said in a House hearing last month, lawmakers raised similar concerns, pressing Smithsonian National Museum and American History Director Anthea Hartig about the museum's exhibits. And yeah, one of the exhibits was titled "Illegal to Be You: Gay History Beyond Stonewall," which featured a bondage harness saying, "You have pictures of bondage. You have some overtly sexual things up there. You have transgender folks." Now, this was questioning from conservative Republican Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett. But yes, I saw similar things that they were doing when I went to visit the city of Philadelphia just a few years ago. That was like when they were really peaking as far as this whole DEI and all of that. Now, I'd been to Philadelphia many, many, many times. I have a lot of family there. My mom came from there originally. And I couldn't remember visiting, you know, Betsy Ross's house, for example, and several of the other high points, seeing the Liberty Bell at that time. But everything all of a sudden had this kind of new signage over it, and it was all about really the black perspective. And again, there's nothing wrong with that to be in addition to. But it seemed as though in many places it was in lieu of or covering how history looked at it initially. And that was, yeah, I was kind of taken aback by that. It literally had changed. They had, like, posted over stuff. Everything was different, really. And to my understanding, some of that has changed fairly recently to go back to more of the, the original stuff. And again, our history is not perfect. I get that. But it's our history. Is there a lack of history, maybe, that a representative of some of the things that black people went through? Yeah. Yeah, you have to remember, I mean, how history is really reported. The winners and the wealthy tend to highlight most of history because they, or their connections, tend to write a lot of it or most of it through the years. You don't, you rarely are you going to get, you know, the poor perspective, the downtrodden perspective. It's much rarer. So I look, they're pushing an agenda, it's clear. And they're using every way they can do it, the curriculum in schools. And then journalism, I mean, it used to be journalism. Who, what, when, where, why? You reported factual information. Now, you tried to do it in a compelling way. You wanted to keep people interested. You wanted them to read the whole article. Even though, if it was done correctly in a lot of pieces, you could get the main function of it all out of the way within the first paragraph. The who, what, when, where, why. That was journalism. Journalism has morphed into agendaism. So that anybody, well, they'll wear this shroud of journalism, but really, they're in disguise. It's agendaism, and they're all trying to promote it. Dana Bash was on CNN with RFK Jr. They got into a bit of a heated argument. And she just couldn't wrap her head around the idea that, you know, she was pushing an agenda, not necessarily pushing the facts and definitely not allowing for other voices during COVID and, of course, since then. I mean, we see it all the time on the left. I mean, I guess it's kind of a sad commentary when you become accustomed to and used to it. But here we are, journalism. Used to be about reporting facts. You wanted to be a truth teller. You didn't care where the chips fell. You wanted to do something that was compelling. You wanted people to read it or watch it, whatever the case may be. In the back of your mind, was it this could really change things? Sure. But you didn't have a preconceived agenda. Like, I have to do this for the left. I have to promote the left. I have to promote all these issues that are issues being pushed by the left. Especially when some of them are 80-20 issues. I mean, I don't care who you are or how long you're on TV or radio or beating the drum that somehow, you know, biological males should be playing in female sports. I, along with at least 75 to 85% of the population, agree with me that we don't want biological males competing in women's sports. But yet, the agenda is promoted and pushed, yes, by curriculum in schools, by the schools of higher learning, the universities, sure, and but also through journalism. Or so-called journalism, now I refer to as agendaism. And that's what is occurring. You know, you can't even have a conversation with someone on the left, but it's for various reasons. Trump derangement syndrome is one of them. But another issue is also that we're not given the same kinds of information. And the left, they're generally the ones that are kind of missing out, if you will, and that is what was referred to in the Smithsonian in that piece by that doctor is that the sin of omission. So the left doesn't always give you the whole story because the whole story might actually lead you to be able to think for yourself and go, wow, that's interesting. And then you kind of weigh it out. You filter it through your own human experience. You come up with an opinion. But if they're omitting clearly important facts and factors of a particular story, that, you know, it's input and output. So that's one of the other reasons why it's difficult to have a conversation with somebody on the left. They'll start out by, first of all, not believing you. What's the old fallback thing they would do? Oh, where'd you get that? Fox News? That's their go-to line. Yep. Good morning and welcome. It's 9:47, and coming up next, things that make you smile, upbeat, positive thoughts that you share with me and I'll share with you. But call in now because I'm flying solo, 877-975-9825. Things that make you smile, brought to you by my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis. Call in now, please. Oh, the sun is shining. It's another day in paradise, my friends. Let's take advantage of it. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show, 9:52 right now. Time for you to call in. If you'd like to, we need things that make you smile. We're looking for upbeat, positive thoughts that you share with us. It's brought to you by my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis. All right, let's go to Backyard Bob. What's making you smile?
So, Bob, I called Friday. I was going to Pensacola, and I found room for my golf clubs. I forgot to tell you, I also found room for my fishing poles. So I did a little fishing with the grandkids up there, and then I got to play 9 holes at Osceola Municipal Course and shot a 45, which wasn't bad, never playing the course before. That's what made me smile.
Well, I 45, I'm assuming that's for 9 holes. Otherwise, you should be on the tour. But that's very respectable for 9 holes. That's about the best I ever do right there. So congratulations. And that makes me smile. I'm sure you're smiling as well. Good morning, Rosebud. What's making you smile?
What makes me smile, Bob, is your show. I sit home because I'm old and I'm in pretty bad shape. I don't go very far. But you always seem to find the nice stories that I can chuckle, and you do it early, and I laugh and laugh and laugh just sitting there thinking about it. And this morning, you made me laugh extra hard. Because, see, my old red rocker is old like me, and I use marine gas in it. It's non-ethanol, $4.53 a gallon to help me. And the price is coming down to help me with the pocketbook a little bit. But the story you said, and I said, I got it. I got the perfect solution for my red rocker. And I'm going to head to the parts depot today, and I'm going to buy me a Dolly Parton-sized bug brawl and put on the front of the red rocker so I could through the wind a little easier and maybe save me a little bit of coin. So you people have a blessed day. Keep the faith. God is good. God is real. And if you see me at the post office with my new bug bra, don't laugh because I'm getting better gas mileage. God bless America. Thanks, Bob, for everything you do. See you, boys.
Always a pleasure. God bless you, Rosebud. I love you, brother, and so does everybody else. People are even asking about you at Valor. I mean, there's nowhere I don't go where somebody doesn't mention you, Rosebud, and you are well-loved around here for sure. And the story he's referring to is they're trying so hard to get every edge they can in being aerodynamic, in this case for the Tour de France, where the more aerodynamic you are, it can actually take, you know, seconds off your time. I mean, you know, and that means winning. So the women, I guess some of them, are accused of finding an advantage by wearing a padded bra, believe it or not. It is a true story. And they say basically what you're talking about is they're using it as a chest fairing, which allows the airflow around the body, and it alters it, reducing overpressure on the thighs, so the rider experiences less air resistance by wearing a padded bra, which apparently is in the bylaws of something you're not supposed to do. I'm not saying, you know, toss the whole thing out. That might not be effective either. All right, I'll leave that one right there. Coming up next, The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beck with Guns and Range in Micanopy. Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beck with Guns and Range in Micanopy. Sometimes it's too good to be true, but is it? The Zac Brown Band played Fenway. 37,000 people were in the crowd. He said, hey, I'm going to give everybody a free cruise. Turns out it really is true. They had to text it to Same Boat Boston, but if they did that by Sunday night, they were in. He partnered up with Margarita at Sea as a lead sponsor for his tour. This giveaway is estimated at $40 million, and it's for real. So every once in a while, something that sounds too good to be true can be true, and that is your smoking gun. The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beck with Guns and Range in Micanopy. I'm Bob Rose. Hopefully Greg is feeling better and he'll be back tomorrow. And we appreciate you supporting what we do. Thank you. Have a great day. See ya.